you can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogian, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
When I first started using this term, alternative right, some 7 years ago, I wanted to get beyond left and right and assert European identity, identitarianism, as the foundation of my ideology. I didn't want to just be an alternative. Our movement is, on the one hand, about yesterday, about our ancestors and the bedrock of who we are. And on the other hand, our movement is about tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. For the current year belongs to the whores and the politicians. But tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow belongs to us. Thank you very much.
That's Richard Spencer speaking at the 2016 Winter Gathering of the National Policy Institute. He's the founder of the alt-right movement, coiner of the term, and you heard a term in there, identitarianism. What does that mean? Is the alt-right Christian? Is it the real torch of Western civilization? Maybe smoldering a bit, but slowly but surely coming back to life. What does it have, oddly, in common with movements, identity movements on the left? We're going to be talking about alt-right identitarianism. Joining us to do so, Dr. Jordan Wales, Assistant Professor of Theology in the Department of Philosophy and Religion at Hillsdale College, author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled, Who Are You? Alt-Right Identitarianism, Violence, and the Intellectual Roots of Western Civilization. Dr. Wales, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. I'm pleased to be here.
Some might say, look, the alt-right movement is essentially harmless. It's just an attempt, maybe a wrong-headed attempt, to restore the ideals of Western civilization. How would you respond?
I think what's most important to look at here is the way in which the alt-right is wrong-headed, and in the way in which, therefore, it would fail to restore the ideals of Western civilization. Really fundamental to Western civilization is the notion of a common human nature, that there is a common humanity that we all share. That doesn't mean it's all expressed in the same way, but it means that my personal identity is found through virtue, through my growth as a flourishing member of a human community. That's the foundation of identity and meaning. When that is lost, then my particular circumstances, my story, become the sum total of my identity. Humanity's decomposed into competing groups. We can't have conversations between each other. And really, it would be a degradation away from the ideal of Western civilization and toward the European tribalism that preceded it.
Who is Richard Spencer?
Richard Spencer is an interesting fellow. He's the originator of the alt-right. He's the first one to propose calling it the alternative right. And Spencer does see himself as wishing to restore Western civilization, but he understands Western civilization as the story of race. He says race is the foundation, it's the root, it's the base of identity. For him, race is a genetic story. It's also a story of culture. And so he proposes that a kind of postmodern focus on personal experience combined with a capitalist focus on the acquisition of material wealth really, in his mind, strips people down to being unpersons because they've lost their story, they've lost their heritage. What I want to point out is that there's a deeper heritage, the heritage that makes possible the unity and the assimilative power of Western civilization that we see in history, and that is the ancient Socratic focus on human flourishing in wisdom and virtue. Spencer sees no space for talk of a common humanity, nor does he really talk much about justice or virtue or wisdom. For him, these are sort of cultural tropes. What matters is the solidarity of one's race and of one's cultural customs and the story of one's heritage. But what I want to point out is that the deeper heritage of Western civilization really is the affirmation of a common human nature, accessible to human reflection, and actualized through the pursuit of justice and wisdom.
How do you explain the bedfellows that are found between Spencer's identitarianism and white nationalist groups, the Klan, and some of the groups we saw on display in Charlottesville last year?
Yes, Spencer wants to say, and I'd like to trust his sincerity on this, I'm not sure I do, but Spencer wants to say, look, we're here to have a conversation about identity. We're here to have a conversation about the flourishing of a particular cultural and ethnic group, and we just want a space in which to do that. We're not here to talk about the eradication of non-whites or death to all the Jews. We just want to have a conversation about identity. At the same time, I'm no expert on the history of the Klan or neo-Nazism in post-war America, but a survey of their websites and of certainly the interviews we saw with Klan members and neo-Nazis at Charlottesville shows some profound points of contact with Spencer. And again, these points of contact are going to be in the way that identity is construed. So first of all, you can look at the Klan and neo-Nazi groups, and I have in mind in particular, I believe his name was Chris Cantwell, who was interviewed extensively by Vice Media during the Charlottesville events. And many of these persons view non-whites and Jews as well as less than meaningfully human. So that Cantwell could call Jared Kushner a, quote, animal, and he marveled that Trump would permit his little girl to be married to a beast. That language is a dehumanizing language that even if Cantwell, I'm sure, would agree that Jared Kushner is of the same species as Chris Cantwell, but that's simply not meaningful. That doesn't mean anything because Kushner has a different identity, one that Cantwell then sees as fundamentally threatening to his own. So there's that point. Second, and growing out of that, is that many Klan and neo-Nazis view the presence of other ethnicities as an existential threat. In the Western tradition, conflicting ideologies and understandings of highest goods are acknowledged to pose a difficulty. So you can think more closer to home. In a marriage, different notions of what is good and right can cause friction between the married couple. And yet, and this is even, you know, this is acknowledged in the New Testament, and yet the Western tradition is also premised on evangelization, we could say, in a broad sense, whether of the philosophical kind, with Socrates prodding and questioning people about the good under the assumption that they can find the good together, or religious evangelization, as we see with St. Paul. And it's the fact of a common humanity that it assures the possibility of a mutual adjustment toward harmony within these conversations. So for the authentic Western tradition, even if a devout Jew or a Zionist were married to an American patriot or evangelical Christian of the highest order, or whatever you want to call it, even these sorts of pairings cannot in themselves be a problem. So the authentic Western tradition, I'm trying to say, recognizes no such threat as miscegenation. Miscegenation cannot be defined as a problem or a threat within the Western tradition, precisely because human beings from different backgrounds, genetic and even cultural, are nonetheless human, and there can be a meeting of the minds there and a mutual joint pursuit of the good. For the Klan and for Spencer, however, the preservation of the white race is the preservation of the foundation of what and who one is, and so miscegenation has to be resisted and by force if necessary. I think that it's really important for conservatives to get this right. I think we have to see, and I identify myself as a conservative, I think we have to see that we don't have to choose between losing ourselves in a tide of immigrant secularism and shopping malls or resisting this mixing to the point of blood. We can choose to be human, and if we're Christian, we can choose to be Christian, and we can pass this on to our children. We can advocate in the public square, all based on the assumption that humanity itself is a given. And that means that we have something to live up to, and it also means there's something in light of which we can all be judged, even in a country that separates church from state and that has no established religion. But if we fall back from the vision of a common humanity into seeing these sorts of conversations with those very different from ourselves as threats, not just to ideals, but threats to our very selves, so if we fall into that, then we have foreclosed the possibility of intellectual and emotional empathy as a human activity. We foreclosed the possibility of actually pursuing the good as something that can be a good for all human beings. We've fallen away from the Western tradition, and we've fallen away from what Socrates would call the love of wisdom.
We're talking about alt-right identitarianism. Dr. Jordan Wales of Hillsdale College is our guest when we come back. Is there a certain irony in that Spencer's identitarianism shares so much with identity movements on the left?
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org.
O Lord, hear my prayer.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jordan Wales is our guest, assistant professor of theology in the Department of Philosophy and Religion at Hillsdale College, author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled, Who Are You? Alt-Right Identitarianism, Violence, and the Intellectual Roots of Western Civilization. We're talking about alt-right identitarianism. Dr. Wales, is there a certain irony in that Richard Spencer's identitarianism, his brand, shares so much, not all things, of course, but so much with identitarian movements on the left?
I think there is, especially in as much as Spencer portrays the alt-right as a fundamentally conservative and Western movement. But in reality, there is a kind of deconstruction of the Western tradition that can exist both on the left and the right. Setting aside for a moment questions one may have about the claims and the aims of a group such as Black Lives Matter, it's interesting to note that Black Lives Matter is actually premised on the idea of a common humanity, and thus becomes, ironically, from Spencer's perspective, more authentically Western than the alt-right. Otherwise, black lives couldn't matter to you and me unless there were a common humanity that we shared. The alt-right, though, is premised on the idea that there's really no such meaningful thing as a common humanity, because the alt-right makes racial identity the totality of who I am. I'm an unperson without it. Spencer uses that word, that phrase, an unperson. So one could have a conversation with certain identity politics or identitarian people on the left about their methods, their critiques, their aims, as long as there's this foundation of common humanity. But there's no rooting for such a conversation in Spencer's ideology, because as he sees it, the meaningful story starts and ends with the success of his group. it doesn't matter to Spencer whether white lives matter to non-whites. What matters to him is that whites have their own space free of interference by other groups. So I'm not saying that racial identity is never a felt, real phenomenon. I'm not saying that it's not a phenomenon of history and genetic continuity, or I'm not even saying that racial identity doesn't deserve respect. It does. But what I am saying is when racial identity is absolutized such that it becomes its own totalizing and all-sufficient standard, then it crowds out common humanity and makes common humanity functionally irrelevant. It's missing something there in a dangerous way. There's a certain way of looking at identity that's strongly associated with what is often called postmodernism. And I have to paint with a very broad brush here to get this point across, but this version of identity would say that my life experience, my culture, and especially my suffering constitute a unique identity. And this is the crucial part, a unique identity that remains inaccessible to those who have not shared that experience. And I agree, there's something very true about the privacy, about the uniqueness of my experience or my family's experience or where such consciousness exists, my race's or my nation's experience. We have that intuition. I mean, that's why Americans can, you can talk about an American being patriotic. It's hard to talk about an Italian being an American patriot, right? So there is something that remains a kind of unique identity where there's something private about that experience. But when that unique experience is made the very definition of a person all the way down, if a person is entirely constructed by inaccessible experience, then a black person and I really have nothing to say to one another. And anything that the other might say to me about living well or seeking what is good and right or growing in virtue, all of that becomes an assault on my very self. Because by talking in that way, they're not really talking about my life. They're trying to expose their experience on me, since those experiences are the only thing that make a person anything at all. And so that's where Spencer and certain forms of liberal or left or progressive identitarianism, and I know those terms mean slightly different things, but that's where Spencer and certain forms of those identity movements actually have common premises that cut themselves off from one another and from others. One can't sit down and talk with someone like Socrates and reason together about the good if experiences sequester and cut us off from one another. In fact, that conversation would become a threat to me or a threat to the other person because our conversation would simply be a cloak for a contest of wills. And that's where the alt-right really ends up. So I think that's something to be very attentive to.
You had mentioned early on that Spencer's ideas are mixed in with some very postmodern sensibilities. Am I to conclude then that if pressed on it, he would probably reject the existence of transcendent truths like justice, like virtue? These things all have to be kind of concretely lived out in your story?
Well, I would suspect that the answer would be yes. What Spencer and postmodernism and the Western tradition all share is that identity is lived out in the concrete circumstances of one's life. Where Spencer parts company with the Western tradition is in seeing identity as something thoroughly constructed by history and by culture, rather than seeing history and culture as forms, as the way that identity has been formed. He sees it as something that has been constructed. And therefore, as you point out, there's no transcendent ideal of justice. There's no transcendent ideal of human virtue and flourishing. And that means that when one's story is challenged, when one's views are challenged, or when one's circumstances or context are altered, one is really at risk for losing oneself. There's no way to continue to be oneself unless one can establish the exterior circumstances, the safe space, if we want to take a buzz phrase from a different context. But yeah, and even Spencer says that. He says, look, we're whites looking for a safe space in which to be white. But that's a betrayal of the Western tradition, because the safe space in which to be what one is for Socrates and for the Western, for Aquinas, for Augustine, the safe space in which to be is the space of oneself. And what it means to be and to be safely is to seek to be a just and wise and good human being. Socrates says we should ask ourselves in the first place, before we ask what we have achieved for our city, before we ask who we are as Athenians, we must ask whether we are living that well as good. And that's why Socrates feels free to converse with slaves and foreigners, because in the end, even if they've been formed in a different culture, even if maybe they've been formed in an unjust culture, yet they are human. And so that conversation remains possible. Socrates sees his mission as one of humanizing others through conversation. Spencer sees that as impossible because someone from outside your story is nothing more than at best a dilution or at worst a threat to your story, because your story is ultimately the construction of your context. Whereas for the Socratic tradition, yours, like my personal story, yes, is a matter of my family history, my national culture, the foods I eat, the movies I watch, the heritage and the history and the heroes that I've been brought up with. But what makes them heroic and what makes those things good is the manner in which they have striven for a human flourishing that's not the victory of my story over against someone else's, but is the victory of my humanity through the pursuit of goodness and justice and wisdom.
Does Spencer's kind of identitarianism, is it open to the possibility of, say, someone who comes from, in his mind, a story that would dilute his identity, becoming part of what he considers his superior identity, a conversion, so to speak?
Well, he takes up this question and he says his notion of race, like they have to become, for Spencer, for an other to become part of his story would mean for an other to become part of his race, which he identifies in the first place as not merely white, but as European, Western civilization. And so in one of his internet interviews, he gives the example of someone coming from Spain who has a lot of Moorish blood, but nonetheless, he says, has grown up in a vaguely Catholic Spanish culture, and thus is part of the story of Western civilization. Spencer, by the way, himself is not himself a Christian. He's an atheist. But nonetheless, that for him is beside the point, because these are the stories that shape who we are and give us the ideals to strive for. He says, on the other hand, somebody coming from Africa who is fully African and has no parentage or heritage within what he considers to be the Western story, that person could not assimilate. But I think that here we can kind of put our finger on the question that you were asking earlier about the lack of a transcendent ideal. Because there isn't, for Spencer, a transcendent ideal outside of racial and cultural story, there's really no way for someone from Africa to become part of the Western story. Because for him, the Western story is not a statement concerning humanity. It's a series of stories, cultural practices, and achievements. And if one isn't part of that heritage, one can't simply buy in. Even if one likes some of the ideas, Spencer's response would be to the person from Africa. He would say, fine, go start your own civilization of explorers and scientists. But you can't join ours because you don't come from our story. But Western civilization, as it actually is, as a point of historical fact, it's true astronauts from America went to the moon. It's true scientists in Europe made many of our fundamental discoveries. But underlying that is the Western confidence in a common human nature and the ability of us to inquire into ourselves, critique ourselves, inquire into our world, understand the world. That objectivity and accessibility of human nature and of the world at large give the possibility of the formation of a culture of virtue and the scientific achievements that Western civilization rightly boasts in. But at the same time, that kind of objectivity and accessibility mean that even if one comes from a culture that is, and I have no particular culture in mind, but even if one were to come from some culture that were utterly blind to those principles, yet one would be human. And so it would be possible, however difficult, it would be possible to become part of, quote-unquote, Western civilization and culture if one recognizes at the core of Western civilization and culture the common human nature and the possibility of flourishing in justice and virtue.
What role, then, in Spencer's thinking, do these allegedly lesser races play in American society? What role does he think they should play?
He doesn't talk much about historically the question of what role have they played, but as to what role they should play, he believes they shouldn't play a role because he sees them as not part of the story of Europeans with their cultural and scientific achievements striking out across the ocean to a new world, because neither Native American races nor African slaves nor later immigrants share in that story. Their presence, in his view, is a drag on the flourishing of the European race, and therefore what he calls a white ethno-state, a state rooted in the ethnicity of the people who live there. And he says that without that, the European race is doomed to failure. So he wants to see other races ejected from North America. He speaks of voluntary self-deportation. But then he muses occasionally on how this could, in the end, become a very violent and bloody affair.
Dr. Jordan Wales is our guest, assistant professor of theology in the Department of Philosophy and Religion at Hillsdale College, author of a recent column for Public Discourse on alt-right identitarianism. We'll be right back.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, February 13th, we're talking about alt-right identitarianism. Dr. Jordan Wales of Hillsdale College is our guest. Dr. Wales, before the break, you were talking about Richard Spencer's musings that an attempt to kind of deport undesirables from the United States could become bloody and violent. You say, in fact, that violence is natural, if not inevitable, but natural to this way of looking at yourself and the world. How is that?
In two respects. In the first respect, because in Spencer's identitarian view, one's identity, one's ideal for striving, one's picture of the possibility of one's life is shaped by, rooted in, constructed by one's genetic and cultural story, the confrontation with someone from a different line of descent and with a different story is of necessity a threat. It's useless from his point of view because there is nothing that augments one's story by contact with some other race. And if one is forced into a culture or into a situation in which one must constantly deal with these putative others, then one is actually being held back from the actualization of who one really is. So that's kind of the conflict there. But then it slips into violence because this is really, from Spencer's point of view, it's a question of self-preservation. You, in his mind, are at risk for being erased. If somebody comes along and tells you that you must live side by side with African Americans, or say that Mexican immigrants have a place in American society too, he would say what that is the dilution, the degradation, and the erasure, not just of certain food groups or even certain languages, but of persons, because that's all persons are in the end. And so the imperative of personal self-preservation extends for Spencer to the preservation of one's cultural and racial identity, and which means that in his mind, that's something worth fighting for, even to the extent of violence.
Does he write it larger than that? Does this kind of ethno-state, does it extend only to the borders of the United States, or does he talk about what a world would look like in his ideal prognostication?
I'm not aware of him talking about what a world would look like. And so, despite his haircut and his preferences for three-piece suits, the kind of vaguely 1930s fascist look about him, so far as I'm aware, does not extend to a kind of Lebensraum that would involve a world domination. He doesn't really speak that way. The way he talks, he would be content with a white ethno-state confined to North America.
So let's talk a little bit about the appeal of this. There is no doubt, and it's deeply troubling, there's no doubt that this appeals both casually to people and even to those who scratch beneath the surface and see what guys like Richard Spencer are really all about, what makes them tick. It still has some kind of appeal. How do you explain that?
I would say that the appeal of Richard Spencer arises especially from our present cultural context. And which is to say that whether one is a liberal progressive or a neoconservative, and I use those terms very vaguely because I know that that means something different to everybody who would identify themselves that way. Nonetheless, the globalist focus on economic opportunity and material prosperity is taken by many as the basis for discussion. When we want to talk about what does a good society look like, it looks like a society in which everybody has the means they need to eat, enjoy some degree of material prosperity, gets health care, and has a voice in the governance of their country. Now, I'm not going to argue against that. I'm thoroughly in favor of that, and people of goodwill can differ about the policies by which to bring those things into being, but I'm in agreement with the basics of that. Nonetheless, what Spencer is going to say is that's a recipe for basically becoming a denizen of a shopping mall, whether online or offline. That's saying we can all be together because we have laws that allow us all to shop at the same mall. We can all buy clothing from Banana Republic, and that's human flourishing. And Spencer is going to say, no, that's not. And there's a certain appeal to that. There's a double appeal to that claim because, number one, it's not terribly satisfying to measure oneself by one's stuff. If that's the extent of who I am, then there's no way that I can ever be a fully realized human being because there's always going to be someone with more stuff than I have. That doesn't take account for human relationships, etc. But the other reason why that's unsatisfying is that there are many persons in America, the land of opportunity, the land of prosperity, who have been, you know, the various phrases have been used, passed over, left behind by the technological revolution. And that's the case in inner cities. It's the case in poor rural communities. It's increasingly the case in small towns and even suburbs. So if that's what it is to be human, a participation in one's government and a kind of vague free market opportunity and the chance for material prosperity, if that's what it is, then most of us are actually prevented from really being what we're supposed to be. So a kind of globalist focus on prosperity just doesn't give an answer to what the human person is. The second reason for Spencer's appeal in his solution is that increasingly in the public conversation in the United States today, people might critique the PC culture or identity politics or whatever label one wants to put on it, but there's something that runs throughout the anxiety of those who critique that. That's the sense that human beings are being chunked up into these groups where various people get special privileges, and then there are others who feel that they themselves are not being attended to. Like, well, where's the identity politics for whites? Now, the answer from the supporters of identity politics would be, well, whites have had their identity politics for the past 200 years, and they don't need any corrective because they're still in power. I want to set that conversation aside, but I do want to say that the kind of more broad, vaguely postmodern identitarianism does say that you are nothing without a group, that along with this kind of material prosperity as the measure of human success, you have this kind of conflicting claim that you are nothing without your group and that your cultural identity is everything to what you are, and that has to be defended in the public square, and that various people are being structurally oppressed in various ways. So Spencer's appeal, like I said, is double. It's that he offers a vision of human identity and success that goes beyond material achievement to offer some sort of ideal of striving. And secondly, in an environment in which there is a great focus in American society today on oppressed identities or underserved identities, etc., he puts forth what he considers to be a way in which, quote-unquote, whites are underserved and oppressed, and he wants them to get a piece of the pie of liberation and of flourishing through the assertion of their identity. So where I think that he falls short, then, is that he capitulates to the shallowness of both a kind of all-or-nothing identity politics and a vague globalistic materialism. And he capitulates to the shallowness of them in not seeking deeper to a human identity that is rooted in a question of what are human capacities? What does it look like to use these human capacities well? Is it just going to the moon? Is there a way to go to the moon badly as well as a way to go to the moon virtuously? And what, in the end, is the virtuous society of human flourishing? Those are questions he doesn't ask. Those are questions that the more broad postmodern identitarianism is reticent to ask because it sees in them the capacity for me dictating terms to someone else. But I think that in order to have a robust sense of human identity that is resilient to cultural change and that is resilient to even the challenging of my story, we have to be willing to ask the question, not just who am I, but also, what am I, and how does the way I live, what I am as human, shape who I am as a human person and as a citizen of this country?
We're talking about alt-right identitarianism with Dr. Jordan Wells of Hillsdale College when we come back. Does he reject intrinsic human value, and if so, what does Spencer have to say about those who can't fully actualize their identity? The prosperity gospel, godliness, Islam, abortion, religious truth claims, scientism, the centrality of justification. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too, Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is called The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World. It's not only edited by regular guest Dr. Scott Murray, it also has some offerings in there by way of essays also included. Pastor Matt Harrison, Herb Miller, and Pastor Christopher Eskett among the authors of this book, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World, a timely and much-needed resource for you and your family and your congregation. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for the book, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. We're talking about alt-right identitarianism. Dr. Jordan Wells is our guest. After our conversation with him concludes, Joy Pullman of The Federalist will join us to talk about the Me Too movement and 50 Shades of Grey, a little hypocrisy detected from a Washington Post opinion writer. And we'll talk about the signs of domestic abuse with Holly Shear, also of The Federalist. Dr. Wales, if Spencer rejects kind of the notion of a common humanity, I would assume that he would also reject the notion of intrinsic human worth. So what does he have to say, if anything, about those in our society who can't fully actualize their identity or live out their story, like the infirm and others?
Maybe it is for him the privilege of being a still relatively young and still relatively healthy man with a man of means with no serious health problems. It doesn't seem that he considers those things. His definition of Homo sapiens, he says, is a collection of seemingly intelligent primates. And so that's kind of where human commonality for him ends, and where the necessity of taking up a particular story of striving and success must begin. I don't see in Spencer the resources for answering the question of human dignity. I'm just not sure what his answer to that question would be, and I think, again, it points to the limitations of his particular identitarian understanding of personal identity.
What does he have to say, if anything, about Christianity as part of so many people's story and as such an integral part of Western civilization historically?
Spencer sees Christianity as a glue that held together Western civilization and that drove it forward, a spirit of self-sacrifice, a spirit of pursuing the good of the whole above one's private good, and a confidence in the transcendent importance of the individual's actions. At the same time, Spencer considers Christianity to be something that is now fittingly superseded. He doesn't think that the Christian story is actually a true story. It's just a story that gave us some temporarily useful ideals. And in that, he's somewhat similar to Nietzsche. Spencer would want to redirect our energies now to the affirmation of, well, I guess you could put it this way. Perhaps for Spencer, the Christian story gave Europe a reason to unite. But now that Europe has been united and, in Spencer's mind, has come to self-consciousness as a race, it's time for that race to become the story. He would say we don't need the story of a dying and rising God-man. The story that we need is the birth of new children in the European race, and they're being trained with the stories of their heroes, and they're rising up to do great things. What he loses from that, though, is not just the possibility of peace and communion between persons with very different stories. He loses the possibility of a story that can account for how a paraplegic could be a full participator in the most meaningful story. What Christianity offers is that the person, even severely limited, perhaps coming from a family background that has no remarkable story, can yet be remarkable and heroic in themselves through their self-sacrificing Christian virtue in love. Christianity offers a transcendent ideal that relies on the transformative power of the Holy Spirit to bring this ideal into human life. And so Christianity recognizes both the challenges confronting human flourishing and yet the possibility of that flourishing beyond the confines that would seem to be imposed on oneself by one's particular background or particular story. Spencer remains sequestered within a particular story and line of genetic descent that doesn't give room either for the full flourishing of the less able members of his story, nor does it give any sort of account of what possibilities are opened by interactions with those who are very different or come from a different story. And so in the end, Spencer's story of race, whereas he sees it as a kind of clear-eyed waking from a dream, that the dream of Christianity was enough to bring Europe together, but now Europe has to operate as Europe. I see it as Spencer's movement as a retrograde motion to a mentality and a time prior to European unification, prior to the great achievements of Western civilization that Spencer wishes to celebrate, back to the agonistic tribalism of the Italians fighting the Lombards, the Spartans fighting the Athenians, and the Gauls fighting the various Germanic tribes. So if we want to go back to that, that's what Spencer's offering us. But if we want to continue pursuing human greatness, which Western civilization has held up before us, although members of Western civilization have not always have often fallen short of achieving that, we have to get back to an identity rooted in human virtue within community, and a willingness to critique our communities for when they fall short of that virtue, and a willingness to engage in the conversations that seek our common humanity.
Dr. Jordan Wales is assistant professor of theology in the Department of Philosophy and Religion at Hillsdale College. He's author of a recent column for the Public Discourse titled, Who Are You? Alt-Right Identitarianism, Violence, and the Intellectual Roots of Western Civilization. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Wales, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. I very much enjoyed this.
When we come back, Joy Pullman of The Federalist is going to join us to talk about the Me Too movement and 50 Shades of Grey. She's recently written for The Federalist a piece called 50 Shades and Me Too Are Compatible Only for Moral Cretins. Stay tuned.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You could even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. Performancefitness618.com.
40 Years Greatly Blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During February, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Family Shield Ministries. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon. is amid Willamette Valley LCMS congregation, where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast, or visit our website at www.HolyCrossLutheranAlbany.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina. Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa. Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. And Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues Etc. 300.